Welcome back for our third installment of the podcast series we're going to be running. This week we're going to be joined by Kenton Hawk for the first, all three sessions actually, and then Zach Woods is going to join us for the last session. But this week we're going to be addressing the issue of slavery, the issue of racial divide in the church, and the issue of technology and inventions, and then how can we use these technologies and inventions in the church for the furthering of the gospel. Sit back and we hope you enjoy. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're going to be starting in section number one, where we're going to be talking about slavery. We know slavery happens in the world today, and we're still reaping the effects of slavery that happened hundreds and 200s of years ago. But is this slavery wrong, or is all forms of slavery wrong? The way we view slavery in America might be a little different than the Bible viewed it at times. So let's start looking back into the Bible. Jesus always spoke that racism was wrong. He spoke that slavery was wrong. But was the owning of a slave wrong in the types of when you're paying off a debt? What do you think, Kenton? So in the Bible, where slavery was more of you would own a debt to an owner, and you would basically work for them to pay off your debt. They'd provide you with food, and it would actually be a nicer lifestyle. It wouldn't be like what we think of it. Do you think the Bible speaks against that? Because...
Right. I mean, I don't know if you could say that the Bible would speak against the concept of paying off your debt by working for it. When it uses the term slave, and in the term of using the word slave, when it means working to pay off your debt, like you say, then no, that wouldn't be wrong. It'd be in the sense of, I'm working for someone around here, and I'm working on a ranch because the ranch helped me buy a new car. So they gave me money for it. Now I'm working for them. I'm living there with them. They're feeding me, but they're just not paying me because they've already done so.
Correct. So with this, we have the idea that they're both called slaves. So do you think it's proper to call both of those acts slavery then if they're so different from each other? Because for me personally, I kind of wonder because, I mean, yeah, the Bible called it slavery and we call this slavery what happened in America. But they're so different, so I don't know. What do you think?
Right. I mean, you've got the difference between slave, servant, and then also another form that translates a little bit easier from Hebrew would be the idea of the bondservant, who would be working for their wages that they already received. And so I think that differential isn't always communicated when translating to English. And so we see the word slave and think, oh no, how could they, when it could mean have a different meaning.
Yeah, I agree. So as we start looking more then at the slavery that happened in America, and we can both agree that was pretty awful and evil. So we have that it was a mistreatment of people. They often weren't fed. They weren't even treated like humans. And then even after slavery ended and they were trying to get out into the world, even at times they still weren't treated like humans. What do you think caused such a... Why do you think we thought it was so okay to treat people so badly? What do you think... like, as we think through it, as Americans, we, you know, think we're entitled a lot, think we're so much better than other people, and that we can treat people bad. Like, how did we ever get to this mindset that somebody was worth so much less than us? And I think that's one of the big questions in slavery is wrong compared to the Bible. Because in the Bible, I don't know if they ever said those people were worse than them. Yeah, they owed a debt, but did that mean they were worse than them? Or, like, lower than them?
Right. I mean, I don't know if I can speak to what their mindset was in that. If you can find that out, then... go research that and go for it, but I can't speak to that part. What I could say is, I mean, we as Americans often do feel entitled, especially when looking at like third world countries, and even the joke of hashtag first world probs, when you look at like, oh no, I ran out of my slushie too early and I'm still thirsty. Nobody in a third world country is worrying about that. And so like, that automatically adds a sense of entitlement of, oh, well, how come I didn't get all my slushy? Like, who cares? And when you look at it that way and think, our problems and matters are so much smaller and more minimal compared to other countries.
Yeah, I agree. So, for whatever reason, somehow we think that we can beat up or bully a group of people for that, or that we can take them from their homeland and treat them a certain way, which is pretty messed up. So, the fact is, this did happen, and though it's not happening in that form today, there's still lasting effects of it, though. As we start looking into these lasting effects, such as maybe they live in worse economies, they have areas of living where there's more violence, harder time getting jobs, how do you think we can start thinking about getting over those stereotypes? Do you think the government should be involved in this, or should it be solely off of how people view it? What do you think? Do you think it's like a state level thing, or based off people changing their mindset?
Can you reword that a little bit?
So, in these communities, people who were affected by slavery and their children and great-grandchildren, whatever, are still reaping the effects of slavery in the sense that their communities are either poor, it's harder for them to get jobs, sometimes people still look down on them, there's still racism that happens. Do you think fixing these problems is based off changing how people view these problems or how people view these people? Or do you think it's off the government stepping in? Do you think it's because they're being entitled to help and just being kept in these communities? Or do you think it's that people need to change their mindset?
I'm going to start off by saying I don't think I or you have the answer to that. Because if we had the answer, then certainly somebody in our government would have that answer and automatically say, hey, this is what has to happen. And that hasn't happened yet. But you can always go with the idea of it is a mindset thing. I would say in both parties of the white culture in general, the idea of, oh, well, I don't see, like, the thought process of, I don't see what's wrong, people are just living in the past kind of thought, and you hear that a lot. That mindset then correlating with the mindset of those in the impoverished areas that are complaining about that, then their mindset sometimes can be the mindset of the victim and victimizing themselves. And so the idea of, well, why don't you just get over it? And the idea of, oh, no, we have a problem, like we're hurt and we have a problem. All they do is feed off each other then and continues to get worse. So it's a mindset most likely on both sides of how do we change this? How do we fix this? And how do we actually work together to do so?
Yeah, that's cool. Actually, in one of my classes recently for a student main class, we talked about this in a sense where we were talking about just how America likes to come in as, and especially youth group missionaries, like to just come into countries and say, we're going to build houses or we're going to do this and this is going to help them so much and we're going to do so much benefits. But when in reality, what we're teaching these people is that we're viewing them as lower and that they need us. And I think that as we need to start stepping in and saying, let us walk beside you through this. Let us help you gain a understanding, gain a maybe a skill, a trade, whatever it is. And rather than here, let us fix this and then not leave you with the ability to do it once we leave. Rather, let us come in, help you, so once we leave, you can keep doing it. And I think that's what you were kind of trying to get to the concept of, just how can we walk with them through it. So, I agree. So, we agree that slavery still happens in the form of sex trades and other situations in the world. And we have agreed that slavery in the form of paying off a loan or a something you owe is not as the same as what happened. So it's more about how the people are treated and through it and if there's any right for them to be enslaved, where these people back in the 1800s in America had no right to be enslaved. The people who owe a debt, they are the ones who loaned the money or owed the money and are put themselves in that situation. So I think we can conclude that slavery does happen in the world, and though today, I don't know of many programs where a servant type thing like the Bible happens. Most of the forms that it happens in the world today are bad. And with that, slavery overall is wrong when it's not brought upon because of your own actions and when you're mistreated. So we're going to take a break there and we'll come back for session number 2. Thank you for joining us back in session number 2. In this session, we're just going to be talking about discrimination in our society. Does it happen in the churches? Does it happen in the common workplaces? And how relevant is it to us overcoming it? As we begin looking, we see that there's a lot of cries out from the people, especially the younger people today, that discrimination is happening. But is this also true in the church? And I think if we start looking into it, there is a big divide and a big difference between the different styles of worship and how these groups interact in the church also. I don't know about you guys, but when the church I grew up in was primarily one race. And although maybe they weren't saying they were discriminative and they weren't going out and telling other races not to come, it just seemed like that divide was always hard to cross. How about your church? Was your churches relatively segregated?
I would say that, I mean, my church was predominantly white, yes.
So, I think, like, and I don't know why this is, and we even see this discrimination happening in forms of, can women be in the church and pastors, and there's just a lot of discrimination that goes on. So I think we should start diving into this problem and seeing why it happens in the church, what ways the church should be loving all people and reaching all people. So I mentioned earlier that there is a little bit difference in styles of worship at time. Not always, but relatively speaking. Just even if you go to other countries, you see it there also. So do you think there's a way that maybe as a church we can start finding ways to incorporate both styles of worship or other styles of worship to make it more appealing and welcoming?
I don't like how you use the word make it appealing, because it's almost like you're trying to sell your church to others then. But when it comes to this conversation, I think it depends on the location of the church. Because if you're a church in the center of Lancaster County amongst farmland and Amish people, if you have any sort of, and I don't know if I've ever even seen this, but any sort of more hip-hop style, and I'm saying that loosely, but in your worship, 95% of your congregation is just going to stand there and stare at you because they won't know how to worship God through that. And so you're losing 95% of your crowd there by trying to accommodate a group that you might not even see in your church at the time. But vice versa, if you go to down like Center City, Philly, and you try and do a bluegrass gospel hymn sing, ain't nobody showing up. Like, you're just not gonna have it. That won't work. And you might be trying to involve others, but now the issue then comes in when you're in a location where it's a 50-50 of population or a 50-30-20 of all different kinds of races and styles. You all of a sudden have this weird mashup, and then you may have to try and find a way where some churches have battled it by doing a traditional and a contemporary service, or they've tried to do different things. I'm not saying any of those are right or wrong, but it's just different ways to look at it, but you also have to look at your audience.
So do you think then it's one of the problems is we're getting the, even if we look at it like in terms of how like at times a country can be run, like we have like an elite few that have control of the church who may be completely different than the people they should be reaching in their community, and they're modeling the service after what they want in a lot of churches? I'm not saying all. I think if we look at our communities, even now, in the communities that I know I grew up in, the dominant people in the area was not completely white, but yet my church was only reaching white people. So I think there needs to be ways that we show that we are, you said you didn't like the word appealing, but the way that we're showing that we do care about them, care about what they prefer, how they express themselves in worship. Because I don't think one way of worship is right or wrong. And even contemporary or non-contemporary, I don't think that's any right way or wrong way to worship. So as we start looking into this, we also brought up the question a little bit earlier about women in ministry. So I know a lot of people have different views on this, but personally, I don't know how far I would go or wouldn't go. And I'm not going to ask you how you feel about it, because you may be completely different, and somebody else down the road might be completely different than us. And I think it's a hard topic to defer. But the fact is, when we're taking this to a point where we're basically putting women down or putting other people down and making the church not a welcoming place, I think that's where we're coming and not truly showing God's love. We're not going to know all the answers. We're not going to have everything right, but we should be reaching people. Even as we look in Lancaster City, we have churches that can be right across the street from each other, be the exact same denomination, yet the difference is one church is predominantly white and the other one's predominantly African American. We have instilled in our culture that it's okay for these two people to worship together, even though they believe the same thing, have the same ideas on how to worship God, on even theological views, yet they worship separate. Not because of space, not because of distance or travel time or how big their building is, but because just their different styles. When in reality, we should be coming together and learning how to worship together and work together for the building of the kingdom and for how we can go out and witness and be better Christians. So that's, I think, where we're going to end that session. We're going to wrap it up, but we'll be back after a short break for session number 3. Welcome back for session number 3. In this session, we're going to be talking about inventions and how the world has been shaped through the inventions, especially around the 1700s to 1800s. For this section, we're going to be joined by Zach Woods, who is currently serving as the chaplain. So, thank you, Zach, for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
Welcome, Zach.
You're welcome. So, as we begin to look at this topic, I just want to set the stage a little bit. For relatively the first however old you believe the Earth was, thousands of years, the Earth relatively stayed the same. You know, we built houses maybe, we built a little bit of inventions, but it wasn't really until a couple hundred years ago that the Earth really began to, and the world in general, began to invent such crazy inventions. We have so much now as we look, electricity and everything that had not been around. So what I kind of want to start getting into is what spurred on this rapid increase of inventions? What spurred on this ability to invent something? Because I personally still don't know how you can invent electricity when electricity had never been around. So as we start looking at this rapid increase of inventions, Kenton and Zach, what do you think caused us to start wanting to invent so much as time came on?
I would say that we've always had a desire within us to invent and create.
So if we had this desire, why do you think it became so much easier, or why do you think so many more inventions came about in this time zone?
Well, I think as the increase of useful inventions progressed, it's like a building structure one on top of the other. As soon as the wheel is invented, then it's easier to invent a car. It's a progression of things. So we look at inventions between 1700 to 1800, and you have things like trains and hot air balloons and different things that aren't possible unless if other inventions are made before them. So I think it's a misconception of this crazy boom that happened in human history of, well, suddenly people are inventing things. No, all the proper things have been invented to make these things possible.
I would also, I would comment though that while we have seen inventions from way back of the idea of the caveman chiseling away at this rock to create a wheel, to seeing that, to seeing electricity and all of that being invented, there was a significant increase in inventions because of the industrial age. And we see that expand, and we look at history, and it's like, sure, there are tons of inventions. Like, somebody had to create a pot to be able to hold water. Like, that was invented. That was a huge deal. Probably bigger than us inventing electricity at times, because now they can hold water and carry it. Like, that helps you survive and live. But when looking at the industrial age hitting, and we have the expansion of, this is how we can all of a sudden mass create things. And when you have things like clothing and food at a mass quantity and volume because of the industrial age, you don't have to worry about that as much, and you can focus on creating more.
I agree. So I think it was part of, like, just us having more maybe free time because of, as we created inventions, we could find easier ways to do things. But I definitely give credit to the person who was able to invent electricity before there was an idea of electricity. So as we keep going, we're going to begin to look at how, as we've kept inventing, we're starting to invent things like, you were talking to me earlier about the skin gun, things like that. Do you think us inventing things like this is us trying to, in a sense, play God? Because there's been stories about people who won't take treatment for cancer and things like this, even though doctors have proven some of these medicines work, but they feel like they're taking away from the power of God in this.
Right. I mean, I would look at the idea of, even if you go way back and you look at the Bible and the way things used to work out, they still had people that were there to help treat different issues. Not like we have a doctor today where they, like, you walk in and they've studied and they go, oh, that rash is this or this is that. Like, they can tell you, where back then you walk in, they try and figure it out, and it's always been that way. And I would say with that, that God is in control of everything, and there is medicine, and if God's telling you go to the doctor, you better go to the doctor. Don't just sit there and go, oh, well, he's going to heal me. Hey, there's a doctor right down the road that he's given the ability to learn this and to study medicine in this, and you're just not going because God didn't give you the doctor. Like, he's there, and he's involved in that.
So by using that logic, then, we agree that a heart transplant, a kidney transplant, anything like that would be okay, would be a good thing.
Correct.
But is there a place that we draw the line? Because I know in psychology, or in, not psychology class, in
philosophy
class, sorry. All right. Because I know in philosophy class, we started talking about, what about transplant of brains? Would that be too far if you were to take your brain out and put it in a fake body? Where is there a point where we're going too far? Do you think there is a point?
I mean, there's always going to be a moral line somewhere, depending on what we're doing, where we're doing, how we're doing it. When it comes to the transplant in a brain, I think it comes down to, one, does the science even work to do it? And two, if they find a way to do it, is it successful? How does it work? How does it then affect the person in which it was done to? Because, and I'm not saying this is going too far, I'm not saying it's not going too far, but if you transplant a brain onto someone who they lost a limb or they lost half their body in war, and you have someone else who died of some sort of brain impact and damage in which they passed away, to be able to give the person with the working body, or give the person with the working brain and head a working body then, and say, here, try this, and if it works, is that a problem? Are we changing? We're not changing who they are mentally. We're not changing who they are spiritually, as long as spirit is in the head. I'm not getting into that. But you're not changing their persona, who they truly are, your identity. But you're changing a lot of other things, and that might go too far. I don't know.
That's good. That's kind of what I was wondering. Where do you think the spirit and the brain line is drawn? What do you think, Zach, on that same question?
I think since it's such a such a process that we haven't really endured or encountered yet, like, if you have a body and a brain, and then you move the brain over to the body, what person is left? I highly question how... I don't even know, who is left at the end of that process. Is it the person with the body, or is it the person with the brain? Where does the soul or the spirit fit into all this? I think it's just a process where I don't think really humanity should cross.
But how is that any different than, I guess, than transplanting a heart?
I think transplanting a heart or a lung, or kidneys, these muscles that are essential to keep the body going, or keep the fluids pumping, I guess, the way that it needs to happen, is a lot different than a brain. I think the brain controls all cognitive function and the mental process of a human. That's a lot different than just a muscle that pumps the blood through your body.
Right. And I mean, if you look at it this way, and again, I don't know where all this stands medically, but if you're transplanting, say, from the neck down, you're only changing out more muscles and more bone structure. So it's the same thing, just at a larger scale. But if you transplant, like, a brain to another person, then you get into the awkward, like, okay, now you just gave somebody else a brain. But I guess if you look at it this way, you're doing the same thing in a switch, but it just in a different sense.
Yeah, and the reality is, like, who's left after a brain transplant? Is it the person who the brain originally belonged to? Or, I mean, I can assume that that's the case, but that, to me, is way more like playing God than maybe a heart transplant. You're creating another human at that point.
Like birth?
Well,
okay. I think we're going to be jumping into the next topic after that, but I just was just trying to see how sometimes our inventions, we can start saying we can do so much, and sometimes we don't know where the line is to draw, and we don't even know if that will be humanly possible. I know they're looking into it, but as we start looking down the roads, it could be a possibility, and maybe that would be a moral line where Christians would have to draw the line and say no. But so we can all agree that there are many inventions that are being invented for good and for help. So I think we should end the session by starting to talk about how some of these inventions can be used for the benefit of the church. We have so many great tools and assets now that what they didn't have hundreds of years ago, that it was so much harder. When Paul wanted to go and speak to the church that's across, he either had to send a letter or physically travel there. If it were today, he could have picked up a phone and called. So do you think these inventions that we have now benefit the church, and how much benefit do they have?
Right. I mean, I think, and this is actually a touchier subject than one might think, because we have people that talk about whether things are intrinsically good or intrinsically bad, and I'm not getting into that either. But you have, when you look at the expansion of technology, it's often driven by something that is not of the church. For instance, like HD cameras were driven by the porn industry. But yet, that doesn't mean that the church can't use that. And so using the expanse of technology can totally expand the way that we can share the gospel with people, the way that we can communicate with people. I mean, besides learning how to build a building properly to spread sound, you need speakers and microphones. Your church can only be as big as your speakers can handle. And then, I mean, you get into larger issues there. But you've got the idea of continually growing, continually expanding, how to share better, how to change things. So the church can totally use this. It just depends on how they do it.
In conjunction with that, I think something that you're seeing in churches that have a lot more resources is the fact that online ministry is starting to really take off. You see live streams of services that reach people that either can't come to those services, or the church itself is just hoping that truth gets out to people that don't know the gospel. And I think that's something that the church recently has jumped on and has used it for their own, for the benefit of proclaiming the gospel.
Right. And I would also say, if you told somebody 15 years ago that everybody in the world that had a piece of technology in their hand would have access to the whole Bible in their language, would be mind-blowing to those who are trying to send Bibles everywhere. And it's like, in 5 minutes, I can have a Bible in whatever language I want in my hand. And to be able to share that then with those around us, to be able to give them a $50 tablet in which they can look at everything and see the Bible in their language and translate it and have it spoken to them, is crazy.
I agree. And even as we start thinking about countries that are poorer countries or countries that don't have a lot of wealth, even then, if you start looking to some of these countries, a lot of them still have smartphones, which is kind of surprising when we see that they're having trouble meeting their basic needs of eating and drinking, and they're walking around with a smartphone. But the reality is there's lots of ways they can get the Bible and the gospel in ways that they can understand. So I just want to thank you both for being here, and we're going to start wrapping up this session, and thank you for joining us this week on the podcast, and we'll see you next time.